It's an SA music classic from the Sunshines, taken off their 1995 album. Yes, I said it. It's a classic. 1995 doesn't feel like that long ago, though, does it? Removable Tattoos, the name of the album that Wanna Make Love was featured on. Cooler with you on the Stateside Connection, and this week's guest is so fascinating. We had part one of my interview with him the previous hour of the show. His name is Cobus de Villiers. He is a retired aerospace engineer, originally from the Free State, now based in Canada. Well, he's retired there. During his retirement, he has penned 5 books. He'll be discussing the 5th book now in part 2 of the interview. A lot of his work that he was involved with in the early 90s was top secret. His biography reads like some kind of spy novel. So in this part of the interview with Cobus de Villiers, you'll be hearing about his book about his time in Russia, as well as how he fulfilled his lifelong dream of eventually working for NASA. Hope you enjoy it.
From Dallas to Joburg, it's Cooler on 919.
Cobus, finally, in terms of your books, A Postcard at Moscow, how long were you in Russia for?
Right. Now, you asked about the highlights of my career. That was the ultimate highlight, except for what I did after I left South Africa and came here to Canada.
Okay.
That project was the most amazing thing, and it also taught me a lot about world politics and what you can believe and what you cannot believe. So let's go into that one.
Yeah.
At that time, I was on my own. It's before I met Marie-France. And one day I got called in and I was told, you need to sign all the security documents and swear silence. But we are trying to work with the Russians to get one of their engines because we can't get any Western aircraft engines because of the boycotts. Now, you know, for me as a Free State kid, having served in the army, in the infantry, it was a big mind change. To go and fiddle around with a Roy Gevaar, you know, and all these people that, our whole doctrine was these people are our enemy and they're trying to shut us down. But anyway, I thought, I really wanted to work for NASA, as we discussed originally in the interview. But of course, being a South African farm kid, how the hell are you going to end up in Russia? I wasn't even allowed to travel to the States because of the projects I worked on. So working in Russia was like the second best. I mean, these guys were challenging the Americans. And I was really intrigued. What do they know that I don't? How can they build these things? I mean, they built the Sputnik thing, which I was so interested in as a 5-year-old. Mm-hmm. This is going to be, as an engineer and as a human, this is going to be a big challenge. I'd like to do this, although it was very risky. So we got smuggled into Russia via very strange detour, which I explain in my book. Because funny enough, of all the projects I worked on, this one is the one that has the most knowledge in the public domain, even though it was the most secret one originally. So we eventually ended up living in Brezhnev's dacha with a team of Russian engineers and a team of South African engineers and scientists. And I went there the first time end of 1990. From 1991, my job was in 1990 to go and look at the feasibility. Can this be done technically? And can it be done politically? And can it be done at all? Does this make sense to do it? I came back and I wrote a report and I said, yes, can be done. It's a big challenge, but I think we should do it. And in 1991, I had a handpicked team. We were smuggled back into Russia. We were living in Brezhnev's dacha. And we were in and out of there until the end of 94. We've been shuttled in and out, eventually to the point where we could go straight in and out just on Russian working visas. Actually, I still have photos of myself with a Russian working visa.
Oh, wow.
And we actually worked with Klimov engineers and Mikoyan engineers. I met a guy like Mr. Stepanov, who was the chief designer of the MiG-29, which time was one of the best aircraft. I managed to get a ride in the back of a MiG-29 test aircraft.
Oh, wow. How
was
that?
Which was an experience of a lifetime, except that the pilot wanted to show off and all the radio communication was in Russian. So I had no idea what was going to come next.
Oh, goodness.
That was a merry-go-round ride you'll never forget.
So
anyway, so we worked together. We developed two new gearboxes and a modified engine, and we developed two modified aircraft, a Mirage F1 from the SAF and a Cheetah D2 from the SAF. And we installed these engines in these two aircraft, and we did 55 test flights, and it worked perfectly. In fact, the later years, the French came and looked at this, because through our clandestine connections originally, they told us, this will never work. You can't get a Russian engine into our aeroplane. And they were intrigued. They were intrigued. They were really shocked when they saw this thing. And that the one aircraft actually won an award at an air show in Russia for the best air display.
Oh, my goodness. That is extraordinary.
Yes. And that's the same time when I met my wife. And this is a whole interesting story that's also in top secret. Uh-huh. Because the moment I met her, our Secret Service guys were onto me and said, stay away from this woman. She's dangerous.
Oh, boy.
They thought she had links to the French Secret Service, okay. Which was a hell of a challenge, because I've never seen such a beautiful little thing in my life.
I couldn't and you were speak told a hands off.
Yeah. I couldn't speak a word of French. My plus English wasn't all that good. And she's a linguist, so she could speak good English. And that was it. I mean, we are still together. We raised the kids. And it's the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. But it was intertwined with this very secret project. And half the time, I couldn't tell her where I was.
Well, she must have trusted you a great deal. That's all I can say. If you've got someone you're in love with and he's busy working on things he can't tell you about and traveling places, there's an enormous amount of trust in that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we had a son, and she used to tell me the story that when he was about 3 years old, she would drive past Jan Smuts Airport, which is today Oliver Tambo, and he would point at the airport and tell her, Papa lives there.
Oh, shame.
because she had to drop me off at the airport so often.
Oh, poor kid. Oh, man. Okay. So how I love that your Afrikaans accent is still so strong all these years later. You don't seem to have lost any bit of South African accent there whatsoever. How long have you been living in Canada now?
Okay, we came to Canada in 1997. So we've been here, 30 odd years, 27 years, actually. But while I was living here, or we were living here, my actual dream from when I was 5 years old to work for NASA was realized. When I arrived here, of course, the project we did with the Russians was a big selling point for me to get a job in Canada in their aerospace industry.
Okay.
But it took 3 years to get a secret clearance. So for the first 3 years, I had to do something else before I could work on classified aircraft projects. So I worked for Dr. Ballard's group that were doing research on hydrogen engines that are supposed to replace gasoline polluting engines. So I worked for this company, and they had a project that was linked to NASA, because the fuel cells, the hydrogen fuel cells we were working on, are actually linked to spaceflight. Most of the manned spaceflight uses hydrogen fuel cells to generate electricity and to make water. So I ended up at Caltech, at the NASA Jet Propulsion Lab campus, and I was there for a while working on part of what we were doing, and we were actually working with a Japanese group. So I ended up working at NASA some nearly 40 years after I wanted to be there. But I eventually did.
Well done. Yeah. Just came full circle there.
After that, there was a big link up with Germany, with Mercedes-Benz, because they wanted this hydrogen fuel cell technology. So we were transferred to Germany in 2004. So we lived in Germany, in Stuttgart, from 2004 until 2007. When we were doing the technology transfer to Mercedes-Benz Research Center in Kirchheim. And of course, I loved it because I had a Mercedes SLK AMG sports car. And I had to drive 30, 35 kilometers on the Autobahn to work every morning.
Oh, what a dream. So yeah.
My challenge was to stay above 200 kilometers an hour the way on the highway with the roof down. And that that was great fun. That was driving a Formula One car.
Well, that's a wrap of my interview with this week's featured guest, Cobus de Villiers, who is a retired aerospace engineer originally from the Free State and now based in Canada. And if you missed out on part one of my interview with him, we'll have that section as well as part two uploaded at 919.co.za as a podcast for you to check out in a few days' time. I am loving sharing some of the just intriguing stories of South Africans based abroad. There are so many people who have fascinating stories to tell about how South Africa shaped them and how they have pioneered new developments, blazed their own trails. Such an innovative nation. So be sure to check out some of the other podcasts as well at 919.co.za.